Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Have something to say? Dial us 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Count on Sundays all season long with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus.
Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. Life, call his wife in. What are we doing? What are we doing on this Wednesday morning? Are we celebrating? Are any Yankees just walking out of the club right now at 4:04? You still got a division to win. Hopefully you're all getting your rest because we know how the Yankees need their 8 hours. How are we doing? McMonagle here with you for the final hour of our show. As we got you till 5 o'clock in the warm-up show, 888-808-1019 on this great baseball morning. We did talk about Jackson Dart. Obviously, the Giants make that decision. They go to Brian Daboll's last-ditch effort to keep his job, or they turn to the best quarterback on the roster. One or the other. One I'm cool with, one I don't love. And we'll find out, I suppose, this week, this Sunday against the Chargers, but Jackson Dart will be the quarterback, not Russell Wilson. What do they do with Russell Wilson? Do they move Russell Wilson? Do they try and trade Russell Wilson? Do they cut Russell Wilson? Ah, who cares? He's not the quarterback anymore. It's Jackson Dart. The new era of Giants football starts, and I'm looking forward to it while cautiously pessimistic. Well, I usually say when you preface it with cautious, usually you go optimistic. Cautiously optimistic that they're doing this for the right reason and not rushing it when that was the plan, to give him some time. So we'll see. Looking forward to that. But this is a baseball morning, believe it or not, as both teams with enormous victories. Yes, it was against the Chicago White Sox for the New York Yankees. But they were down 2-1 in the ninth. They rally. They win. They clinch a playoff spot. They celebrated. They poured champagne all over themselves, all over Meredith. It was a wonderful thing to see. If you're a fan, these are the great days. The champagne popping is the best. I know it's only to clinch a wild card spot, and they still have the division in sight. But still, that was a fun night for the Yankees. Big comeback win in the ninth, even if against a lousy team like the White Sox. They get off the deck. They score two in the ninth. They win the game. They've clinched the playoff spot. And because the Boston Red Sox took down Toronto in Toronto, the frauds are now only a game up on the Yankees. Game on, five to play. The Yankees playing the dregs of Major League Baseball, and they're taking on Garrett Crochet later tonight while Max Fried tries to mow down the Chicago White Sox. I'm feeling good about the Yankees' chances to win a division. And the New York Mets have it back. They have it back. They have their destiny back in their hands, as last night the New York Mets had their greatest win of the season, a game that was left for dead at 6-1, as Peterson yet again had absolutely nothing. He's been miserable for a month. He was miserable last night. He went, what was it, an inning and a third or an inning and two-thirds? Couldn't get out of the second inning. Brazoban had to come in and save his bacon, as he was awful, and you're wondering if you could pitch him again, and he's supposed to be slated to pitch the last game of the year in Miami, and you might need that game. But that Met team last night got off the deck down 6-1, and did what good teams do. We so often have talked about they do the things that bad teams do and find ways to lose, and they certainly have. But last night, you get the leadoff home run from Lindor that has typically buoyed this team to victories and really gotten them off the mat. And to set the tone for this six-game stretch, I thought that was an enormous home run. And then it gets swallowed up by the miserable performance from David Peterson. They're down 5 runs in the fifth inning. They haven't won a game all year that they are down 5 runs. They haven't had a comeback of 5 runs or more. They haven't had a comeback in the eighth inning or later. They still haven't done that, but 5 runs down last night, 6-1, the Chicago Cubs and Dansby Swanson gave them their opening. He boots a double play ball, and instead of ending the inning right there, it allows the Mets to kick the door down as you get the ground ball from Lindor that gives him a run, you get a walk from Soto, you get a missile off the right field wall from Pete Alonso that you were kicking yourself that it wasn't a home run, and then Brandon Nimmo with the moment of the season. For Brandon Nimmo, a much-needed spot where he was miserable in the on the weekend against Washington. Came up with the bases loaded, one out with a chance to win the game and struck out. He left base runner after base runner. He was terrible in those two games. They lost to the Nationals. He was the biggest loser in that series. And to take that moment last night, down 3 runs, 6-3, in the fifth inning with 2 men on, and hit an absolute bomb to tie the game, that's the signature moment. Last night was the signature game. The bullpen comes in and does a really good job. You get the home run from Alvarez after he was robbed of that chance to tie the game in the ninth with a home run on Sunday. He comes back Tuesday night and hits an absolute bomb to give the Mets a 2-run lead. They bring in their all-world closer in Diaz for 6 outs. He strikes out 5 Chicago Cubs as they win the biggest game of the year. And along with the Cincinnati Reds losing to the Pittsburgh Pirates, the Mets have it back in their own hands. And right now, it is a 1-game lead over the Reds. With the Reds having the tiebreaker, it's a 1-game lead over the Arizona Diamondbacks, who came from behind and walked off the Dodgers last night. Both of those teams own the tiebreaker of the New York Mets, so it is the slimmest of margins. But the Mets are back on top in the final wild card spot. They own their destiny, and all they have to do is allow this game to be the moment, to be the turning point, to be what spurs them to 5 good games. 5. 5 winning baseball games and set yourself up for a chance to do anything. Now, the pitching rotation is going to be interesting how they handle it. They got Tong going tonight. But that's one hell of a victory. That's the typical cliched, you know, championship DVD game. That's a game you look back at if you win this thing, that it started last night. And we'll see if they can do that. We'll see if this team can find it within them to have that be the moment that we all look back on as they're making a run in the playoffs, because that was a great win last night. Because we all had them left for dead. At 6-1, they were dead. They were dead. They were dead. It didn't matter that Cincinnati was losing. They were dead. They got off the deck. Won a big game. Big moments. Yeah, they played lousy. They played lousy to start the game. You got Juan Soto dropping a ball out in right field. You got McNeil throwing the ball all over the place. That leads to that extra run to make it a 5-run deficit. And then they came through in the fifth after a mistake by Dansby Swanson. They got a little bit of a break that the starting pitcher, Horton, pulled his back or had some sort of back issue and had to come out of the game. And in the moment, I just thought the Cubs were doing what they felt was right for a young starting pitcher. But it turns out he's got a little bit of a back issue, so they get a break that an excellent starting pitcher, who's been the best starting pitcher in baseball since the All-Star break, has to leave the game. They get a break because Dansby Swanson boots an easy double play, and they made it pay. They made the Cubs pay for those mistakes and that injury, and that's what good teams do. And we've been talking long enough about all the things they do that bad teams do. That's what good teams do. When you give them an inch, they take a mile. And that's what happened last night. They scored 9 runs. Diaz was excellent. And they're set up back with their own destiny in their hands. And hopefully the Mets can figure out a way. And then the Yankees win. They take a playoff spot. They celebrated with champagne. They came from behind. Anthony Volpe played well in this game. Two hits, including the leadoff one in the ninth. That's the tying run. And Caballero comes through with a nine-pitch little bloop single that I still, if you've seen the highlight, and maybe we'll play some of the highlights on this very excitable Wednesday morning, this baseball Wednesday morning. The game-winning hit for Caballero that sends the Yankees to the postseason. Michael Taylor was in the game as a defensive replacement in center field. I can't explain how he handled that ball, how he played that ball in center field. I can't explain it because it's two outs. Judge is on second base. If that ball lands, Judge is going to score. And instead of laying out, now, I'm not saying it was an easy play, and maybe he lays out and doesn't make it, but he slows down and plays it on a hop like he's going to try and get a good throw off. It made absolutely no sense. But, hey, that's the White Sox problem. The Yankees beat the White Sox and avoided what would have been a devastating loss considering the Red Sox took down Toronto. And now, again, the Mets are up one game. The Yankees are down one game. And, yes, they have the tiebreaker, so it's really two. But the Toronto Blue Jays, the fraud Blue Jays, are slipping. And the New York Yankees are playing the White Sox. The New York Yankees are playing the Baltimore Orioles. And they have one hell of a chance to not only win the division, but be the number one seed in the American League and make sure the American League pennant goes through the Bronx. It's right there to be had. It's right there to be had. 888-808-1019. Let's get to the calls here in our final hour. Let's get to Walt in Oceanport. What's up, Walt?
Chris, you got me so juiced after that monologue, okay?
Yeah, I'm juiced.
I mean, 6 weeks ago when you called the Bluebirds frauds, okay, I was like, oh, no, they're doing really well. Yeah. But you called them frauds, and right now you seem to be on track with that. So next week when I call, okay, you could be right, and hopefully you are.
Well, we'll see. And again, I just want to make it clear, not that anyone cares, I called them frauds a week ago or 2 weeks ago, whenever you said I did. I didn't start calling them frauds then. I've been calling the Blue Jays frauds since September of 2021 when the Yankees went into Toronto, both teams battling for that final wild card spot. The Blue Jays, you know, were playing well. The Blue Jays had this team of all second-generation superstars, and the Yankees were coming into town to get beat up. Vlad loves to beat the Yankees, and the Yankees went in there playing lousy and took two out of three to secure a wild card spot. From that series on, I have called the Blue Jays frauds. They've yet to win a playoff game. I've been doing this for a long time with the Blue Jays, and I can't wait to be proven right.
Listen, after that insane monologue that was awesome, I'm a Yankee fan. I'm so juiced. I mean, that they're in the dance. Okay, yes, of course I want them to win the division. I do not like the layoff, though, okay? I'm a little, suspect about, players just sitting around. But I'm very happy for my Met friends. That was a very gritty performance for them to come back from down 6-1. But my initial call was to talk about the Giants, but you got me so juiced up about baseball.
I got you.
I mean, I was like, okay, forget about it. But
I hear you. I'm pumped about the baseball. The baseball is crazy. The American League playoff is crazy. What's going on with the Tigers, who now the Cleveland Guardians took over first place in the division, and they are now the third wild card team holding on to a wild card spot. How is that possible? Like, it's been crazy, man. It's been, the Astros are fading. The Mariners are leading that division. It's just a crazy, crazy American League.
Listen, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think this is a Dable, just to switch gears.
Yeah.
Dable and trying to keep their gig. Okay, I do not think, because I'm totally in line with you. When I spoke the other day, I'd like to see Jackson Dart start against the weaker teams like the Saints, the Raiders at the end of the season, maybe the Cowboys at the last game, because it's a juggernaut between Denver and two times with
Listen, three of right now. Yeah, no, I agree. It's not even so much the soft landing spot, but that's part of it. I mean, you're talking about four, right? If I'm doing my math right. No, one, yeah, two. Yeah. Four of his first five games in the NFL are going to be against the Chargers and this defense that looks, top of the league for the first 3 weeks of the year. The Eagles twice, once on short rest, as they're going to play Sunday against the Saints and then Thursday against the Eagles. So in his first 4 of 5 games, he's playing the Chargers, the Eagles twice, and flying out to Denver to take on the Broncos, and a defense that is supposed to be top of the league. It hasn't necessarily played that way yet, but it's a very talented defense that was lights out last year, and I expect is going to get better as the season progresses. So, I mean, that is a very difficult. I know the schedule is difficult to begin with and throughout the whole thing, right? There's not a lot of soft landing spots, and the Saints might be the easiest game of the year, and that is the other of the 5 starts. But, I mean, that is a gauntlet to start. That's one hell of a first 5 games of your career, man. And I'm just, because he is associated with Shane and Dable, who are toxic with the fan base right now. Like, I'm just concerned that if they're forcing this and he's not ready to play and it looks bad against the Chargers and then he comes back on short rest against Philadelphia and looks bad there. I mean, this crowd, while understanding on some level that rookies struggle, like imagine they lose the Saint game and you're talking about being like 0-6 and 0-7, taking on Philadelphia, getting their ass kicked. This kid's going to get booed. This kid's going to feel the wrath. Like, it's just a tough spot. It's a tough spot. I do feel better listening to guys like Connor Hughes and some other people who do believe the Giants have felt he's been ready since the beginning of the season. And that once he got in the building, it was quite obvious that he wasn't going to need all the time they thought he might. And that if it was an open competition to start the season, and that it wasn't just a fait accompli, they were going to go to Russell Wilson, they paid him, they probably made him promises, they were going to give some time to Russell Wilson here, that if it was an open competition, that Jackson Dart probably would have won the competition and outplayed him during camp. So I feel a little bit better hearing things like that, which we had heard and kind of knew, but we haven't seen it now for a while. We saw him in preseason look really good, but it's been a while now, and we see how this team looks and how the offensive line looked in week one against Washington, and there's just the fear that it's going to feel like we've ruined him. It's going to feel like he's got no chance to be confident, no chance to be successful, playing the tougher teams in the NFL. And yeah, it's trial by fire. I get that. And I understand that you got to learn sometime, and there is no easy landing spot in the NFL necessarily, but I'm just concerned, man. I've seen quarterbacks ruined. And I hate to thrust them into a spot. Maybe I'm hung up on the idea that there was a plan and now they're off the plan. I just don't want it to be, hey, like this, I don't want this to be the conversation inside the Giants room. Like, hey, we're 0-3. The fan base is going nuts. If we lose another game with Russell Wilson, I could be back to seeing planes flying over this building. Like, you told me we drafted the right kid. I want to see him play. I don't care if he's ready or not. You know, show me you can develop a quarterback, because I don't know what else to do. So let's get the fans off our backs. Why don't you show me you can develop a quarterback, try and win some football games, and enough of Russell Wilson, because I don't feel like the fans being, you know, if it was a team with a fan base they were playing, it'd be half the building would be Charger fans. Like, that's the conversation I don't want. I hope that's not what is, you know, the thought process. I hope the thought process is, look, we're 0-3. Russell Wilson ain't cutting it. This kid's been better this entire time. He allows us to do more offensively. Plus, it's time to just get him out there. Like, because he's ready. That's what I hope the conversation is. And if that's the conversation, I feel better about it. That first conversation, though, makes me nervous. Phil and Howell. What's up, Phil?
Hey, what's up, man?
What's going on?
Before I get to my Giant point, I was watching a Met game last night, and an incredible stat that I saw towards the end of the game when Dansby Swanson was the last batter to hit.
Yeah.
And they showed what his, like, stats were against Diaz.
Mm-hmm.
You know that he was 0-10 with 9 strikeouts. That's insane.
That is a lot of strikeouts and only 10 at-bats, which I'm trying to remember. Didn't Fleegs remember better? Didn't Dansby Swanson have, like, a monster series in that final series in 22? when they blew the division? Why do I
think he was big, just not against Diaz.
Okay, obviously not.
And he had a big hit in 2023 when Diaz was hurt. It was against either Ottavino or Robertson.
Yeah, that's right.
Obviously the numbers are the numbers, so I knew he didn't do it against Diaz, but I was saying I'm surprised because in my memory, I have this memory of Dansby Swanson killing them. So I'm surprised it was that bad against Diaz.
Yeah, and I'll get to my giant point. Listen, I'm not a DeBolt fan, a Dable fan whatsoever. All right. To me, I think he's basically on the coaching level of a Richie Coates height. I think he's that bad. I really do. But I think he did
take a team to a playoff and won a road playoff game. Did Kotite win a road playoff game?
No, I know what you're saying, but you know, everybody just goes back to that time. I mean, you know, that was then. This is now.
That was then. This is now. But you're going to call him Rich Kotite? You have no problem going back in time. I'm just saying.
Yeah, no, I don't. That is true.
I'm just saying.
You got me there. I'm just saying,
I don't disagree that he's been terrible for the last 2 years and that these first three games have been ugly. I'm just saying he has shown us some level of coaching where, you know, the names that people want to bring up never did.
All right. Well, one more thing.
Yeah.
I could see Dodd having a really solid game this week on the offensive end. But, you know, you get a guy like, Herbert that comes in there. I mean, I think he's going to pick them apart. I really do, especially. I think the game's going to be more on the defensive end than it is on the offensive end.
Yeah. I know. Is it bad to say I don't care? Is that bad? Should I not do that? I got to see offense. They're playing Jackson Dart. The game's about the offense. Like, I want the defense to be good, and I want to win the football game, obviously. And you're right. If they lose, like, is it about Herbert being stopped? I don't know. Like, they didn't really do much against the Raiders in the second half. Now, they had the game pretty much under control, but they only scored 3 points in the second half of the Monday night game against the Raiders. They probably should have lost. I mean, Denver was outplaying them for a lot of that second half, and then they found a way to have the big drive, and Denver didn't do enough offensively and gave the ball back to them one too many times, and the Chargers went down the field and won the game. I'm not overly concerned about Herbert going nuts on the Giants defense. I'm really not. I'm not overly concerned about it. Is it possible? Of course. But let's be honest. They just went to the rookie quarterback. There's one thing you got to see. You got to see him play and play well. This game is about the offense. That's what it's about. You're hoping the defense can keep it close. You're hoping the defense can limit the amount of scoring. You know, their young running back got hurt. You're hoping you can control the run game a little bit, make them one-dimensional, and see if you can stop, you know, McConkey and what's his name, having another great year back with, after his time, Keenan Allen, after his time in Chicago, coming back. I mean, that dude is just, how consistent is Keenan Allen? So he's back and comfortable inside that offense. They got a good offense, but this is about watching the young quarterback play. That's what it's about. 888-808-1019. And that's my concern, is they don't score any points against this defense, who is good in the defensive backfield and get pressure. Like, this defense is really good.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him. And they're telling telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right. And the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Good.
Your friends pretend they know sports. WFAN actually does. Get smarter, louder, and way more annoying at watch parties. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always streaming on the Odyssey, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn apps.
All right, 4:33, McMonagle here with you on The Fan. A lot of baseball today. The baseball news we didn't get a chance to talk about yet was the ABS challenge system coming to baseball next year. It will be in full effect. We saw it in spring. We've seen it in minor leagues. You will get two challenges throughout the game. Now, this is the only one I want to be sure, like, because in football you get two challenges. If you get them both right, you get another one. They say if you get it right, you can continue to get them. I'm curious if you get one, you just keep that same one, or you have to get both right. I don't know. I think it's just if you get it right, you don't lose it, right?
Yeah, so I was unclear, like, if you win one, lose one, are you done, or do you get to lose two? But
right.
If you get them right, we know that you definitely get to keep them.
I know. So because that's how it's been put. If you get them right, you keep it. My thought would be if I challenge and I'm right, I don't lose a challenge.
Right, like
and
you it get should two. Be you get to lose twice in a game.
Exactly. You get to lose it twice in a game. So if you're unfamiliar with it, if you don't remember from spring training, because you're not as locked in as I am watching spring training games, pretty much only a batter, a pitcher, or the catcher can challenge a called strike or ball. It has to be within, you know, a few seconds of the call. The batter, the pitcher, or the catcher, with no help from the bench, no help from someone who saw it on camera, obviously, they have to quickly tap their helmet, and they can challenge any ball or strike call. Now, again, you only get two, assuming you get them wrong. If you get them right, you continue. And it's interesting. You know, it's funny that Aaron Boone doesn't like it. When talked about it during spring training, he doesn't like it. He doesn't like the idea of a challenge. He doesn't, you know, it's something you got to talk to your players about. When do you do it? Do you do it in the second inning, you know, on the first strike of the count? Is it worth it if you're not 100% sure? So are there guys who are going to abuse it and challenge everything? So it's a little interesting, but at the same time, I want the calls right. Like, I don't, it's easy. It's simple. I don't know how Aaron Boone's going to feel if he loses a playoff series on a pitch to Aaron Judge that's 6 inches down below his knees, but it's called a strike like so many other pitches have been called against Aaron Judge. Like, there's a venue now, moving forward next year, to eliminate bad calls that cost teams games. It's very simple. So I don't know why anybody would be opposed. The only thing in opposition would be screw replay. Just run the whole damn game through it and give the umpire the buzzer, like they've talked about, and just have every ball and strike called by this ABS system as opposed to a challenge. That's really the only argument. The argument shouldn't be, oh, I don't like it. Let the umpires call it like they see it. I'm sorry. There's been too many missed calls. It's crazy. And now that we have this technology and we have the box and we see it so blatantly, that it drives you nuts. So I'm looking forward to next year with this challenge system. We'll see how it works. The pitch clock has worked. Like, say what you want about Rob Manfred. And there's a lot of issues with him and his ownership and his, you know, commissionership. And we just got over a big fight. We're probably in line for another huge fight between these two sides. But I do think that a lot of the rules he's instituted, I mean, the pitch clock has been an absolute success. I think the three-pitcher rule that everybody hated when it first happened, the three-batter minimum, has created actually more strategy than just being able to go to any pitcher you want on any at-bat you want. The idea now that you have to bring in a pitcher and have him face a lane of three hitters, you know, knowing that there's a good chance he's going to have to face the opposite side at least once in that at-bat, I think that brings some more strategy into the game. I actually have no problem with it, and I think I like it. And then I'm okay with the overtime, the extra inning rule too. I don't mind it. It's done what it's supposed to do. It's shortened games. It's created more opportunities for all the small ball that you all claim you love. I don't know what's the problem with it. It's not baseball. Close your eyes and pretend someone hit a leadoff double. It's not that hard. It's really not that hard. So, and now the new technology, I think baseball's done a lot of things over the last couple years that have improved the game, believe it or not. I really do. So, I'm looking forward to not having to worry about Aaron Judge striking out on pitches at his shins in a big spot. I'm looking forward to that. Yeah, Aaron Boone might not be, but I certainly am. And I'm looking forward to more baseball tonight.
How awesome is it going to be next year when we're crushing a player, a batter? Like, why'd you burn that challenge in the second inning?
I know. Can you imagine? Burned it in the second inning. It was a 3-0 count. And it was called a strike 3-1, and he challenges it, something stupid like that, in a game where they're up two runs in the first or something. Yeah, I absolutely. And you know who the guy on the Yankees is that I think they're fearful of? Because we have seen him really get frustrated with pitches outside the zone, is Jazz. Jazz strikes me as the kind of guy who would quickly, like he has been, you know, he gets very frustrated with umpires. So I could see him be the guy that they have to, like, you know, hey, we're going to pick our spots with this. But he's been great, man. Jazz has been great. Another home run in, not another home run, a couple doubles in this game. He's been swinging the bat good since he came here. I haven't even really talked so much about him being a 30-30 guy. Like, he's a 40-40 guy over his first 162 games as a Yankee. He has been a great success. And quite honestly, I haven't done this yet because I don't necessarily want to do it until the Yankees, you know, get into the postseason and do something. But my man Brian Cashman has had a really good year. I know it's only 89 wins. I know they're going to win 91, 92, maybe 93 games or something like that. I get it. It's not the 99-100 win season you'd like. But to be in the position they're in, I know the payroll. I get it. They lost Juan Soto. They've lost their ace to injury. His moves this season have been extremely positive. Like, he brings in Max Fried. Where would they be without him? Bellinger for Cody Petit and $25 million? Bellinger's been their second best player. Paul Goldschmidt, because of the emergence of Ben Rice, who, by the way, he drafted, he's become less important down the stretch. But the beginning of the season, when they were building the record that they were able to coast on for the 2 months they were miserable, he was incredible for them at the start of the year, and he's still hitting left-handers at a clip at 400, and he plays a good first base and is going to end up being either a guy who starts against lefties or is a valued piece off the bench and has meant a lot to this team. Devin Williams felt like for 90% of the year, and certainly he cost them five games himself, they'd be in first place if they pitched anybody but Devin Williams for four or five games early on in the year. But right now, he's pitching as well as he's pitched all year, and let's see what he does in the postseason. Getting Trent Grisham in the deal, I know it was a throw-in. He still got Trent Grisham in a deal that for Juan Soto, where Trent Grisham's still here hitting 33 home runs. Ben Rice, who they drafted and developed, has taken over first base. Like, he's done a really good job this year. You got to give it to Brian Cashman. He's had one hell of a year. Plan B has been far better than I thought it could be. He's done a really masterful job. They clinched the playoffs, and I'm telling you, they've got an excellent chance. The Blue Jays are frauds. I've been saying it forever. They don't win meaningful games. Like, forget a series. They haven't won a playoff game. Not a one. And now they feel the Yankees coming. They got Garrett Crochet pitching against them tonight. Max Fried on the mound against the White Sox. When I come on 2 o'clock in the morning tomorrow, there's a very good chance they are tied in the standings. Yes, that still gives the Blue Jays the one game advantage because they've got the tiebreaker, but this division was over. It ain't over now. John in Charlotte. What's up, John?
Hi, how you doing? First of all, I want to say I really enjoy your show. You think you do a great job.
Thank you very much.
I'm interested to see your take on, I understand the Yankees are one game back against Toronto in the division, but it's really two, as you've stated multiple times. Where do the Yankees go against if they face the Red Sox in game one, you know, in Crochet? You know, I understand Jazz Chisholm has had a great year, but is this where the Yankees really use their righty splits and maybe Chisholm's on the bench?
No.
I know they dropped Grisham in the lineup.
No.
Against lefties. No, you don't think so?
You think Jazz is going to go on the bench against lefties? Absolutely not. No. No,
he's
one of the guys who plays. It depends. There is a question to be had, John. You're asking the wrong one. You're asking the wrong player. The question is third base. The question is third base. Are they going to play, and the question specifically is third base with Max Fried and Carlos Rodon on the mound for the Yankees. If the Yankees are playing, let's just set it up right now, Yankees-Red Sox, game one, Fried versus Garrett Crochet. Who's playing third base for the New York Yankees? Because Max Fried gets a ton of ground balls to that side of the field, a ton. The third baseman is extremely active, and he's been great defensively. But he has struggled offensively against right-handed pitching, let alone left-handed pitching. And Caballero can play an excellent third base and is hit a little bit against left-handed pitching. And they've also got Rosario, who can play third base. I don't know how well, but he can play third base, and he's crushed left-handed pitching. Even in his pinch hitting for the New York Yankees, he's been good against lefties for the New York Yankees playing sporadically. So the question is, will they put the offense above the defense? That's the question. It's not so much will they not play Jazz. They're going to play Jazz. Jazz is an everyday player. He's playing lefties, righties. It won't matter. The question is, who's the third baseman? And specifically, when Fried and Rodon, the lefties, are on the mound against a team that might have a lot of right-handed hitters like the Red Sox do. When, you know, someone else is on the mound, you know, like if it's Luis Gil, I think it's probably an easier decision to play either Caballero at third or to play Rosario at third. But specifically when you're looking for the defense with your left-handed aces on the mound, I wonder what the Yankees do. I wonder what the Yankees do in that spot. Because you watch him play every day at third base. McMahon is a brilliant third baseman. Not good. The plays he made in this game yesterday, yeah, both were in the dirt and had to be scooped. But he came in on a very difficult, high-hopping, you know, ground ball that he had to bare hand and make a throw on. He kind of go on a ball down the line. His arm strength is excellent. His glove is excellent. He is a brilliant defensive third baseman. And when Max Fried's on the mound, you need a very good defensive third baseman. But I have zero faith of him doing anything offensively against a tough lefty or a lefty, for any lefty for that matter. So that's a question. Who's the starting shortstop? And if there's a lefty against the Yankees, will they favor defense over offense with McMahon? Those are the two questions offensively with this team. Everything else is pretty much ho-hum. Like, I don't think, even against lefties, you're going to see Jason Dominguez crack the lineup. I think, obviously, Bellinger's great against lefties. He's got a highest batting average lefty on lefty in all of Major League Baseball. And Grisham's just been too good, too important. And defensively, that outfield's too good. They're not going to mess with it. So I don't care if it's lefty, righty. Dominguez is a bench player, bottom line. So I don't think the outfield's affected. I don't think second base is affected. Catcher could be affected because I think they play Ben Rice anyway. You could play Goldschmidt at first and then have Rice catch. Like, well, I guess first base and catcher. Catcher could be against the tough lefty because you want to play Goldschmidt. Who's your catcher then? Do you go defense or offense at catcher? Does Rice hit well enough against lefties to warrant the defensive slip by playing him at catcher? Because he's better offensively against lefties, but is he that much better offensively against lefties to warrant the dip in defense you would take by playing him over Wells? So the lefty does present some questions, but it's not Jazz, and it's not the outfield. It's third base, and it could be catcher. And then the shortstop thing is just overall, who's going to be your shortstop? So we'll find out about this Yankee offense and how they want to handle it. But those are the questions heading in. Who's your everyday shortstop? And then when there's a tough lefty on the mound, particularly when your two left-handed aces are also pitching, do you go defense on the left side of the infield? Do you go defense at catcher? Or do you play your best offensive team, which would be Rosario and probably Rice behind the plate with gold?
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Minute first.
Talk New York sports here. The Fan.
Bum, bum, bum. All right, 4:53. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. Rapid fire style, which is a loose term if you haven't noticed. I've had some fun with rapid fire style. Sometimes I do rapid fire. Sometimes I let people go on forever. I try and keep you on your toes by lying to you. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. Let's get to those calls, though, as we've only got a few minutes. Mitch in Fort Lee. What's up, Mitchell?
Good morning, Big Mac. And what did I tell you a few weeks ago? Don't give up on the Yankees. And guess what? We're back. And we're going to win the division. I don't have to worry about the Jewish holidays next week, so I can go to all the playoff games. So I'm psyched. But I got to tell you, I'm watching the game last night, and it was just unbelievable. Yankees doing. I said, you can't lose this game. I'm watching on my phone, watching what the Blue Jays are losing. I said, come on, Yankees, you got to pull this out. And how they won the game, I have to tell you, it was a great game. And, you know, you had a few points. I want to have to give you my opinion. I really do believe Volpe's going to be the shortstop. Yeah. McMahon is going to play third base. And I think you got to put Rice at first base and leave it there. That's the way to go. Because you want a defensive catcher, and Wells is better behind the plate than Rice. That's my personal opinion.
Well, we're talking against left-handed pitching, though. You're really not going to play – you're not going to play Goldschmidt, who kills left-handed pitching and is the better defensive first baseman?
Well, listen, anything, Dave. If you really want to do it this way, what is Stanton do against left-handed pitchers? Let him come off the bench and let Stanton start. And then, if you need him, bring Stanton in later in the game. You can do it that way. But I mean, you want Wells as the catcher. Wells is a lot better catcher than Rice.
That.
I mean, you really.
No, I understand that. I'm just saying. I think against. And thank you for the call, Mitch. I just don't know what's. If Goldschmidt's not going to hit against left-handed pitching, I don't know why he's on the team. For, like, the odd chance of pinch hitting against a left-handed reliever? Like, the dude owns left-handed pitching, and he's a better defensive player at first base. Like, I think he's playing against left-handed pitching. I think he's the starting first baseman. So the question is, what do you do with Rice? And Rice is a far better offensive player than Wells. And he's done okay at the catching position. It depends on it depends on how the series is going, to be totally honest with you. Like, if it is an ALDS or an ALCS, like a wild card, you probably go defense. But if you get into an ALDS or an ALCS or obviously a World Series and you're struggling to score runs, you probably go with your best offensive team and take your chance. It depends. Because I want to see Rice on the field, but I also want to play Goldschmidt against left-handed pitching. So I don't know how they do. I don't know how they do both without putting Rice at catcher. And I don't think he's been that bad. He's not as good as pitch framing as Wells is, but I don't think he's been that bad. And then the question at third base is interesting to me. It is. I don't know. I think if there's a right-handed pitcher on the mound, I don't think twice I'm putting in Rosario or I'm playing Caballero. Probably Rosario. That's what I would do. If it's a left-handed pitcher, if it's Rodon or Freed, particularly Freed on the mound, yeah, I probably do just play McMahon and eat the loss on offense against the left-handed pitcher from McMahon and just make sure I make every play defensively, because there's something about the Yankees when when defensive plays aren't made behind them, it just feels like, oh, here we go. Like, it just, and I know they always lose because they don't score enough runs. Like, I get it, but it's going to be an interesting question. I agree with you. Anthony Volpe's probably going to be the starting shortstop. He's been better. Let's be honest. He got the shot, and he's been better. I wonder if they can give him one more right before the postseason starts. What does he need, 3 days off? On Tuesday, so Monday, Sunday, Saturday, give him a shot Friday night, Saturday morning. Get him ready to go by Sunday, by Tuesday. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting. Those are the questions. Now, the questions for the Mets, and we'll get into this as we go through here. And, look, hopefully they go out and win tonight behind Tong, who really bounced back nicely off of his miserable start where he couldn't get out of the first inning. And, you know, you have confidence in him and his stuff, at least. It's a big game. We'll see how the rookie reacts. Big game in Chicago against the Cubs with, you know, the season on the line. But where do you go with this rotation? Because Peterson can't be pitched anymore. So, like, there's a very good chance Sunday, the last game of the year, which would right now be slated for the pitcher who pitched last night, which is Peterson. There's a very good chance you're going to need to win that game, whether to hold off the Cincinnati Reds or hope the Cincinnati Reds lose and you can overtake them one way or another. It's hard to imagine having a two-game lead heading into that final game. It's possible, but you're going to have a two-game lead over both these teams. You know, you might need that game. What do you do with this rotation? What do you do with Senga? Do you split up the piggyback? Do you manipulate something? Do you do a bullpen game? I don't know what you do because Peterson can't pitch anymore. But that's for a later date. Big win needed tonight for both the New York Yankees and the New York Mets. As we are pulling hard, we got plenty of baseball to watch. We're pulling hard for the Pittsburgh Pirates. We're pulling hard for the Los Angeles Dodgers. We're pulling hard for the Boston Red Sox. Let's go. I'll talk to you guys tomorrow at 2 o'clock after all the fun baseball. On a Thursday morning, we'll start getting more into the weekend football games. Enjoy the rest of your day. The warm-up show is next. I'm out of here. Bye-bye.
Sports Radio 101.9 FM. WFAN, New York.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.